All right, let's call this meeting to order. Planning Commission, October 18th. Commissioner McKenzie, can you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Please rise. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner McKenzie.
Here.
Commissioner Whitmore.
Here.
Commissioner Martinez.
Here.
Chairman Sloan is excused tonight.
Okay, we have two sets of meeting minutes from September 6th and October 4th, 2016. Any edits, comments? No?
Nope.
Seeing none. Approve them as they are submitted. Item 5 on the agenda, any correspondence?
No, sir.
Thank you. Item 6 is citizens addressing the commission on non-agenda items. So if there's something a member of the public would like to speak about that's not on the agenda, now would be the opportunity. Seeing none, we will move on. We have no consent items this evening, so I will open the public hearing for item 7, Pine Street Tentative Parcel Map, Division of Land, DL 2016-004. Staff, you have a presentation?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Good evening, members of the commission. Nathan Anderson, City of Rockland Planning Department. First of two items I will be presenting tonight is the Pine Street Tentative Parcel Map, Division of Land 2016-0004. The project is located at 4105 Pine Street. It's about a quarter of a mile northeast of City Hall. Currently, the site is approximately 0.31 gross acre in size. It's remained undeveloped until May of this year, when plans to construct an approximately 3,000 square foot single family home were approved by the building department. You can see that there in the aerial photograph, as well as in those photographs that were taken today from the street view. The site contains some trees, including oak, sycamore, and olive trees. The sycamore and olive are in this area here and would have to be removed as part of the project to access proposed parcel 2, but there is no proposed removal for any oak trees on the site. The site is zoned R15, single-family residential, 5,000 square foot minimum parcel sizes. It is designated medium density residential by the Rockland General Plan. So you can see by the diagram on the left, shown in very orange, it is consistent with the surrounding development on all sides. Everything is also zoned R15 and medium density residential. The proposed tentative parcel map is shown here. It divides the single 13,600 square foot parcel into two, parcel one on the left being 8,087 square feet, and parcel two on the right proposed at 5,520 square feet. The house, which is currently in construction, as shown on the both the site plan and on the tentative map, was purposefully located on the westernmost portion of the lot to allow sufficient space on the property to build another home on the eastern portion, pending approval by this body. The proposed parcel split would be consistent with all of the requirements of the R15 district, including minimum lot area, 5,000 square feet, minimum lot width, 50 feet, and maximum lot coverage, 35%. Now, this for parcel 2, because there's no proposed structure at this point, is based on the construction of an 1,880-square-foot structure. The applicant showed us what that would look like on the site to show that it could be constructed outside of any of the setbacks. It's also important because Section 1708020 of the Municipal Code states that you cannot have dwelling units that are less than 1,050 square feet as far as primary units go. Therefore, it was important to make sure that this would actually fit on the lot. As proposed, it does, and it is below the maximum density allowed for the parcel. Project is exempt from further CEQA review pursuant to Section 15315, Minor Land Divisions. A notice of exemption has been prepared, and it states why it's exempt. This action, designated approving authority, is the Planning Commission. It does not have to go to City Council because it is a tentative parcel map and not a tentative subdivision map. So it would only go to Council if it were to be appealed as part of Section 16-16-200. Staff, in conclusion, believes that the proposed tentative map complies with all requirements of the Rockland Municipal Code and recommends that the Planning Commission approve the project. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any questions from commissioners?
I just got one quick question. Can you go back to the site plan there that shows both of the? Yeah, that one's fine. What's the purpose of that kink in the sidewalk there? Do we know what that's for?
That
it kind of comes down and then comes back up.
When we were doing the Safe Score Out projects back in the early mid '90s, that's when we put in the frontage improvements. We several areas in Old Town, we would jog the sidewalk, curb, and gutter around if there was trees we were trying to save or utility poles that we were trying to avoid. So there's areas where you'll see jogs in the improvements out there. I think at this location, I think the purpose was to try to avoid those two trees that were right along the frontage and not have to take those out.
Mm-hmm. And then if there's a driveway that's associated with that, where does that sort of intercept that jog?
It would be located here. Here's the garage area, mm-hmm. So it would come down in this area.
So it's just kind of somewhere on the corner of that jog coming down?
Yeah.
Okay, that's it.
Any other questions? No? Is there... Thank you, staff. Thank you. Applicant representative that had any comments they'd like to address to the commission? No? Anyone from the public? Seeing none, bring it back to the commission for deliberation. Any comments?
Sure, I'll begin. Based upon staff's findings, I find it consistent with zoning general plan and the findings in the staff report being presented to us for the subdivision ordinance and the MAP Act and the notice of exemption as a minor land division under CEQA. So I'm in support of the project.
Yeah, I don't have any concerns. I find it kind of interesting that we jog the sidewalk to save a couple of trees, and here we are saying we're going to take the trees down, but I get it. Generally, I don't have any other issues, and, I'm supportive of the project. It meets all the criteria for this region. It makes sense that someone would want to do this, so I don't have any problems.
Right. I think with that, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland approving a notice of exemption Pine Street tentative parcel map DL 2016-0004. And I'll take these separately given our last conversation at the Planning Commission.
Okay. There's been a motion. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. None opposed?
I also move to approve a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland approving a tentative parcel map, Pine Street tentative parcel map, DL 2016-0004.
And a motion?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And motion carries. None opposed. Thank you very much. So now we would move on to agenda item number 8. General Plan Amendment, Placer County 2016 Local Multi-Hazard Mitigation Plan Update, GPA 2016-005, or 0005, rather. Staff presentation.
Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. David Mullenbrook with Environmental Services. The item before you this evening is a request for the Planning Commission to approve a resolution recommending to the City Council that they incorporate the 2016 Local Hazard Mitigation Plan update into the City's General Plan safety element. By way of background, in 2000, Congress adopted the Disaster Mitigation Act, which primary purpose was to create an ongoing community-wide public government planning process that ultimately resulted in local governing boards, including the Rockland City Council, in adopting a local hazard mitigation plan, or what is commonly known as an LHMP. The LHMP delineates hazards and assesses the risks of a variety of natural hazards that could potentially impact Placer County as well as the city of Rockland. Additionally, the LHMP includes a review of each jurisdiction's existing hazard reduction capabilities and recommends actions and projects to further reduce that vulnerability. The Congress at the time recognized that the cost and expense of mitigating a disaster prior to it actually happening is much more effective than paying the costs and expenses associated with disaster recovery. So that was the primary purpose behind the Disaster Mitigation Act. As required by that act, local governments are required to update their LHMP every 5 years in order to remain eligible for future federal disaster mitigation funding. And again, that's mitigation funding that's pre-disaster. The purpose of hazard mitigation is to reduce or eliminate long-term risk to people and property from hazards. Placer County developed the LHMP update to make the county and cities within it and its residents less vulnerable to future hazard events. This plan was prepared pursuant to the requirements of the Disaster Mitigation Act so that Rockland would be eligible for federal emergency management agencies, or FEMA, pre-disaster mitigation and hazard mitigation grant programs. The county, as the lead agency of this process, followed a planning process described by FEMA, which began in April 15 with the formation of a Hazard Mitigation Planning Committee comprised of key county representatives, City of Rockland staff, and other regional stakeholders, a total of 22 groups. The HPMC, or the Planning Committee, conducted a risk assessment that identified and profiled hazards that pose a risk to the county and the city, and assess the county's and city's vulnerability to these hazards, and then finally examine the capabilities in place to mitigate them. The county is vulnerable as a whole to several hazards that are identified, profiled, and analyzed in the LHMP, specifically floods, levee failures, wildfires, and severe weather are among the hazards that can have a significant impact on the county. Hazards identified to be of significance to the city of Rockland included flooding, severe weather, such as heat, freeze, heavy storms, and also wildfire and hazardous materials transport. The goals and objectives of the LHMP are, number one, to minimize risk and vulnerability of Placer County and the jurisdictions within to the impacts of natural hazards and protect lives and reduce damages and losses to property, economy, public health and safety, and the environment. Goal number two, provide protection for critical facilities, infrastructure, utilities, and services from hazard impacts. Goal number three, improve public awareness, education, and preparedness for all hazards. Goal number four, increase communities' capabilities to mitigate losses and to be prepared for, respond to, and recover from a disaster event. And finally, goal number five, maintain FEMA eligibility, position the communities for grant funding. The Placer County 2016 LHMP is incorporated by reference into the City of Rockland General Plan Community Safety Element, or will be so following City Council's action. This allows the city to remain eligible for federal disaster mitigation funding should the city wish to pursue such funding in the future. Beyond regulatory mitigation, such as the floodplain development ordinance, the building code, enactment of city goals and policies, there are also potential mitigation actions identified in the LHMP update, and those include the following. Number one, integrate the LHMP into the safety element of the general plan, which is what we are here for this evening. Number two, participation in the Federal Emergency Management Agency Floodplain Community Rating System. Number three, creek channel drainageway clearing and maintenance. Number four, high water use landscape and irrigation retrofit. Number five, open space fire prevention and vegetation management prescribed grazing. And lastly, number six, GIS-based mapping of pertinent information that can be used by all agencies in the development of plans and during emergency incidents. While the identification of these mitigation actions does not commit the city to their implementation, the value of these mitigations is recognized by the city, and as a result, many of them are ongoing. As a result of being listed in the 2016 LHMP update, these mitigation actions are now eligible for future federal disaster mitigation funding, should such funds become available and should the City of Rockland wish to pursue those funds. Unless there are any questions, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, David. Any questions from commissioners?
I have one. I looked specifically at the plan relative to, and it fortunately it captured transportation and rail type of risk, because that's in the news these days with all the transportation via rail of oil and various materials. The one thing, and I apologize, I didn't have a chance to look at it when I was driving in this evening, thinking through other risks, gas transmission and then jet fuel via whatever that company's name is that transports.
Kinder Morgan.
Yeah, being two other risk factors in our community that are present and probably real. Are those captured somewhere in the plan? I can go back and look. If not, might be something for council.
They are not. We discussed that with the LHMP working committee, and they felt that it didn't really constitute transport in the sense of transport by either vehicle or rail, because not only do we have hazardous materials being transported by rail, we also have hazardous materials being transported via the interstate and highways that go through the City of Rockland. So while we brought that subject up, they did not feel that it qualified for that particular category. I would say that the potential for risk is there, not only with the transmission line, but the location of the tank farm within our city. Mm-hmm. And should funds be available for any pre-disaster mitigation efforts, we would see if we could possibly participate in those if necessary. Ultimately, the impetus for disaster mitigation planning on that behalf is with the operator, which is Kinder Morgan.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments? No, I don't have any either. Are there any members of the public that would like to address this item? Seeing none, bring it back to the commission for deliberation, or I can entertain a motion.
You know, I compliment the efforts that went into pulling this all together. It captured the things that just I'm generally aware of and I was able to track down and find easily within the plan. So, yeah, definitely support the city's adoption of the plan.
Yeah, I'm supportive as well, so I think we can probably just jump right into a motion here. I'll move resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland recommending City Council approval to amend the City of Rockland General Plan Community Safety Element to incorporate by reference the Placer County 2016 Local Multi-Hazard Mitigation Plan LHMP Update, General Plan Update, Placer County 2016 Local Multi-Hazard Mitigation Plan LHMP Update GPA 2016-0005.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
None opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, staff. Good job. So that concludes our public hearing items. Moves us to the non-public hearing section of our agenda. Item 9, C's Candies Awning Substantial Compliance, Appeal of Staff Determination. And I guess I have a quick question because I see it as a non-public hearing item, yet I'm assuming someone...
Yeah, I was going to indicate that technically it defined public hearing and that it would be a public hearing where the appellants are requesting a review of staff's decision.
And it would certainly be appropriate that the appellant could address...
That's
commission?
Correct, and even if it wasn't, you know, on the agenda as a public hearing because of the Brown Act requirements, et cetera, anyone can speak on any matter that you will take action on.
Okay. Thank you. Staff?
Thank you. So the second and final item tonight that I will be presenting is the See's Candy Appeal. So a little background on this. Back in July of 2016, See's Candy submitted an application for a tenant improvement to occupy a newly constructed space at 5498 Crossings Drive, Suite 102. It's the center suite in this building here. That building is part of the Rockland Crossing Shopping Center, which is located on the southeastern side of Highway 80. The Rockland Crossings General Development Plan was adopted in March of 2008 for this area. It included several different architectural design guidelines as well as a uniform sign program for the area in order to regulate the design of the center as it was built out in the future. On the right side are the building colors and materials which were approved for the center as part of that general development plan. It included seven different choices for awning colors, including black cherry, cocoa, fern, linen tweed, parchment, true brown, and wheat. I have to apologize for the scan quality on this. 2008 wasn't that great as far as scans go, but I do have the original colors here that you can take a look at that show them a little bit more clearly. So I'll bring those up in a moment for you. These photos were taken yesterday showing that all the tenants within direct vicinity of the suite use the fern colored awnings. It's kind of that forest green that you can see. You can see it here on the different sides of the buildings. As part of the July submittal for the tenant improvement, the applicant had proposed a black, white, and gray striped awning. This reflected the corporate colors which have existed since 1921, according to the applicant. C's Candy, the applicant, was told during the review of about the general development plan's existence and its requirements for solid awning colors. The planning manager made a determination at that time that the proposed striped awning designs were inconsistent with the approved design guidelines. C's complied with the determination at the time and submitted plans with revised awnings showing the design consistent with the requirements. Staff approved that design and as substantially compliant with the design guidelines, and the TI was issued. But in September, about a month ago, the applicant once again approached staff regarding the request to install striped awnings. Here are some renderings that the applicant was asking about once again reflect the corporate nature, the branding for C's Candy. Staff explained at that time that the determination had already been made that the stripe pattern was inconsistent with the general development plan. But the appeal process was explained, which brings us here tonight. The applicant appealed the determination per section 1786.010 on September 7th. That section states that any person dissatisfied by an act or determination by an official may appeal that to the Planning Commission. As part of their application for the appeal, a justification letter was submitted, which stated that back in 1921 and beyond, C's would build freestanding shops that had iconic elements, and it's important that those iconic elements be allowed to be maintained as part of that corporate branding for the business. So staff still does not consider the proposed striped canopy awnings to comply with the approved color palette of the general development plan. However, if it is determined by the commission that the proposed awning is consistent, is substantially compliant, staff will be able to process the modification through the TI process. It wouldn't have to come through any further entitlements. Such a determination, however, would establish a precedent for approval of future requests for striped or pattern awnings in the Rockland Crossings. So it would just be something for us to keep in mind moving forward with future tenants. And again, happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions from the commission? I don't either at this point. Thank you. Is there a representative of the appellant? Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Richard Escalante. I'm the shop construction manager for C's Candies. And Nathan did an excellent job in presenting the case in front of you. I'd just like to add that we're proud to be coming to Rockland. Finally, we've done many temporary stores, and we figure it's a good time to come in permanently. So we're great, looking forward to that. And as far as the awning's concerned, we just like to try to do everything in our design arsenal to get as much attention as possible and use that into our benefit and to pretty much the city's benefit as well. So other than that, I'm here to answer any questions.
Any questions, commissioners? I do have one question.
Sure.
The shopping center management, do they have an internal review and approval process?
And they have approved it.
And they have approved it?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, at this point, I want to go back to staff now. I'm just curious, because I know we have other corporate, you know, chains in that center, and I know we've had before us in other centers requests for maintaining corporate colors, corporate, you know, branding, et cetera. But staff mentioned in the presentation that it would be precedent setting if we were to go with this.
Well, due to the specificity of the general development plan, which really clearly showed that these would be solid colors, staff didn't feel it was appropriate to make the substantial compliance call that this striped awning would make sense. The other corporate entities out there, the Starbucks and the In-N-Out Burger, they all have solid colored awnings. They haven't requested any deviations from those standards. So no precedent had been set within that center to make any deviation consistencies, which is why brought before the planning
commission. Understood. I think that's exactly what I was kind of getting towards. The only other thing I might ask is if the other corporate entities are using solid colors, do they vary from the palette that was approved in the general development plan?
The other awnings in the center are all consistent with the approvals in the design guidelines. In this instance, staff was able to approve a black, solid black awning, although it was not one of the listed colors. We felt that it was in the color that they proposed was in the same tone family, and therefore, as a solid black color, we could approve it. So we didn't limit them just to what was there. We were able to make that finding. But to go beyond that, to allow stripes and open the door for everyone to come in with designs,
right.
Staff was not comfortable doing that.
Great. Thank you. Any follow-up or from commissioners? Nope. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Escalante. So I'll bring it back to the commission for any deliberations.
Public comment?
Sorry. Seeing none. Now I'll bring it back to the commissioners. Any comments?
I mean, I'll jump in. I'm always concerned about precedent setting and, you know, if we open something up, do we open something, you know, to everybody within that center? At the same time, I don't see this as necessarily that offensive, and I kind of find it a little bit hypocritical because we have Bass Pro Shop just down the street that is its own look and style in and of itself. I kind of see that as part of the center. So generally, I don't have any problems with a striped awning. I think, you know, See's Candy in particular as an entity, I understand their brand and what they're trying to achieve there, kind of an old world sort of look. And if that achieves that better, I would tend to be supportive of it. But get your thoughts.
I may vary from that a bit, just in the fact that thank you for See's Candy coming to town. Great long-term historic business, very prosperous. Like to see you in that shopping center. I will probably be there frequenting it towards Christmas. But that being said, I think there's a process, and that would be to go back and amend the general development plan for color palette. I get staff's compromise as a solid color and finding that consistent. But once we go beyond that, that's where we start getting into a slippery slope situation where this one is stripes and the next one's polka dots, and all of a sudden the design or the general development plan means nothing. So for me, the proper course of action would be for Donahue Schreiber and tenants to come back and amend the general development plan if they want to consider other colors within the center.
Thank you. Yeah, I would tend to agree with Commissioner McKenzie. The general development plan is an ordinance. And Donahue Schreiber's, you know, they build shopping centers. They have all kinds of tenants. They know what their tenants like, and they try to propose design standards that can accommodate the tenants that they're trying to attract to their centers. I absolutely agree with staff's take as far as finding a compromise. I was looking for a black or a slate or a dark brown or something that, you know, could, I think, go with the See's Candy colors while it'd be a lot easier to make a consistency or substantial compliance call with the general development plan. So with that said, we do have a process. It seems maybe a little burdensome and cumbersome for what might seem to be a more simple type of revision, if you will, but it just opens the door to a lot more. Maybe there's a larger tenant with a larger, you know, corporate branding of some kind, and then so where do we limit it, you know? So with that said, I'll entertain a motion.
Let me add something to that, and I'm going to disagree with both of you guys, because I actually think that if we change the zoning ordinance, then we really set a precedent and open it up for all of this other sort of stuff. You know, a single tenant like this that's going to go through this process, I don't think is going to set that precedent. And so I hope that we're not suggesting that Donahue Schriber come back and sort of open that zoning ordinance, because I don't know if I'd be supportive of that particular item. So
yeah, I think that's a good point, and at least just speaking on my behalf, and it could have been, you know, taken the wrong way. I'm not sure if I would support opening the door to what exactly. I mean, you made a very good point, but, you know, so you certainly have the right to appeal that to us. And if it doesn't go in your favor, you certainly have the right to appeal that to the council as well. But the center has its set of guidelines for a reason. And, you know, we don't have our full commission here tonight to maybe get another perspective. But if this commission were not to support your appeal, I wouldn't necessarily take it as a suggestion that if you were to amend or request an amendment to the general development plan, that that would be supported as well. That would be something you'd probably further discuss with staff and what have you. So just want to make that clear, because I think that's a point well taken. So with that, I will entertain a motion.
So would this be a motion to uphold staff's substantial conformance determination, depending upon?
That could be an appropriate one.
Okay. Yeah. So I will move to uphold staff's determination that the request is not substantially compliant with the general development plan.
And second. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
And the motion carries 2-1. Okay. That takes us to item 10 on the agenda, informational items and presentations. None, it says. Is that still true? Okay. Item 11, reports and discussions from planning commissioners.
Staff may cover this as well, but our design review committee met this week to further look at the citywide design guidelines plus the district guidelines, and so that meeting went well. We resolved some issues there. I probably created a few new ones just by asking questions, but that's the nature of those meetings. It is design after all, and so we all have our perspectives on what the true intent of something is versus the way it's crafted by wording and how it get applied down the road by staff. So, but it was productive, and I suspect we'll be seeing something back to the commission here before long.
Great. I just have one quick question. This was something I think Commissioner McKenzie just alluded to. We took a motion for the map separate from the motion for the environmental determination. So there's something I must have missed last meeting?
I had a discussion with Mr. Commissioner McKenzie, and I don't think I had a discussion with staff. There has been a recent case that indicates that even though it's kind of nonsensical from my perspective, that the environmental approval should be separate from the substantive actions. So just because of that, we discussed maybe that would be a better practice for us. So that was discussion, staff.
So if we have three items, like a design review and a map or something else, we can take those items as one, and then the environmental resolution separately?
Yeah, so just the recommendation is that the environmental approval is taken before the substantive actions, and the substantive actions can be together.
Okay, good. Thanks for that clarification. Item 12 on the agenda, reports from city staff.
Just a few items. You probably are aware already, but I did want to bring to your attention that City Council will be meeting, I think it's this Thursday, the 20th, to elect or to select a planning commissioner. So we don't have any insight in who that will be or how that will work, but hopefully they'll have a new one for you that evening. Wanted to also mention, just following Greg's comments, the intentions are to bring the guideline documents to the Planning Commission on November 15th for your review. We're hoping you'll take action in the form of a recommendation to City Council. We'll have essentially a resolution ultimately that will amend and dissolve the original documents, replacing them with the new documents. And then we're looking to go to City Council on November 29th for their adoption. That's the intent at this point in time. And you'll get that information in the agenda packet ahead of time, so you'll be able to see all of that. As I mentioned at our last meeting, we still haven't really received that many comments. We received some. We try to address all those comments, and we'll be prepared at that meeting to address those, as well as the comments we received from you at the last meeting. We're still working through exactly what is the best way of doing that in terms of relaying all that information to you. But if you get it and you have more questions and you don't see your answers, just give us a buzz or, you know, at the meeting, we'll be happy to answer those. The other thing I wanted to mention is kind of following the See's Candies discussion, just about substantial compliance. I'm sure you're aware that staff on a regular basis faces substantial compliance determinations often. And we try our best to be able to deal with those at the staff level, not always successfully, but, you know, there are just some times where we feel like we're just not able to find that substantially compliant, and it comes to you or it doesn't. And sometimes there are decisions we make that you might see in the built environment that you might also question. So if you see those from time to time, feel free to give us a buzz. One other thing, Laura brought up a good point. You might recall in the architectural guidelines, there's the establishment of a new committee, which we're referring to as the Architectural Review Committee. And what staff is envisioning for that is, you know, again, two City Council members appointed by City Council, two planning commissioners appointed by City Council, and a staff member forming the committee. And then when the projects come before the committee, it would be presented by the case planner, so to speak. Staff envisions at this point in time that the committee would meet pretty frequently, or at least be scheduled to meet pretty frequently, at a minimum. The minimum meeting scheduled for twice a month. Could be more frequently. We're still working through that. Probably on a set date and time, we would advertise all the meetings at one time at the beginning of the year, and then a week prior to the agenda and to the meeting, we'd either post the agenda or we would cancel the meeting if there were no items. I'm only mentioning that to you now because, you know, if you're interested in serving that kind of capacity, right now we're thinking maybe the meetings would be like on a Wednesday at 11 in the morning. And most items we could probably wrap up from 11 to 12. If it carried over, you know, past 12, maybe say 11 to 1, we'd probably provide lunch for you. And like I said, probably twice a month. There could be some email correspondence or some other communications, you know, letting you know what projects are coming and whatnot. But it'll be a commitment. But I think it will, as we've talked before, be an improvement for us. So please keep that in mind. If you're absolutely not interested, let us know. If you think you might be, let us know too, because we'd like to pass that information along to council, or if you wanted to speak to them directly.
Mark, can I ask one question with respect to that? Is it the intent, and by the way, I think that is going to be very helpful as well. It's something that I've kind of approached at this planning commission forum, if you will, of having some sort of ability for folks, especially I'll say the more complicated, more complex projects, to have kind of a sounding board early on before they bring it to here so that there's no surprises when they end up at the Planning Commission. Is it the intent that all of the projects that have some sort of design review component would go through this body first, or is it limited to particular projects that are more complex? I'm just curious how that's going to work.
So again, at this point in time, the recommendation from the committee is that only projects that are in the districts would go, that require design review, would first go to the committee. That's the intent right now. And then again, for projects that are in the district, if they don't require design review, let's say it's not a new structure or not a major addition or anything like that, let's say it's more of a maintenance item, maintenance items that require a permit could be reviewed and determined by the director, unless the director referred it to the committee, or if the applicant didn't like the director's decision, they could ask for it to be appealed to the committee.
Great, thank you. That brought reminded me of something I drove by the other day where the K-Love building is, and I think other associated buildings. Did those get repainted? Because I thought they were like a, not peach, but earth tone color. Now they're kind of dark. I don't know if anyone else saw them, but might want to just...
We'll look into it. I'm not aware of them being repainted, but as you know, painting does not require any kind of permit from the city, so those kind of instances often are a catch-me-as-you-can kind of thing. So we'll look into it.
Okay. All right, any other comments, questions? All right, this meeting's adjourned. Thank you.